This is Robert Beatty bringing you London Column. London Column, which brings you items especially chosen for your interest and entertainment from the worldwide service of the BBC. This edition of London Column opens with a description by Captain Engelmann as he walks about the Unter den Linden in Berlin with a BBC microphone. Then back to London to hear some experiences of a firefighter just returned from duty in Europe with the Americans, the sound of the fastest fighter aircraft now in service, Britain's jet fighter, the Gloucester Meteor. A comment from a London housewife on Britain's current problem, queuing. A description of the monsoon by squadron leader Charles Gardner back from Burma. And to close our program, we take you back to Berlin to hear a description of General Marshall's inspection of the 2nd Armored Division, United States Army. How many years did we Londoners look across the English Channel and wonder what it was like in Berlin? Now we know. It is a picture of defeat. A cold and desolate picture. Listen now to the voice of Captain Franklin Engelmann as he walks up Unter den Linden in the heart of Berlin, describing what he sees.
Went right up to the other end, right up to the Evangelical Church, and outside it stood a war memorial and the Heroes Hall, and the War Museum of the Last War, and two English tanks of the Last War, which formed part of one of the war memorials. And across the road from that, there were the battered remnants of the Kaiser's Palace. And further along the Unter den Linden, the Opera House. It's an indescribable scene of chaos. We've known it all in England, and we've seen it in plenty of towns in Germany, too. But there's never been anything quite like the destruction there is around here. There's been little or no attempt in recent months, it's evident, even before the Russians entered the city, to clear up the damage. They've just stacked the bricks on one side. Every now and again you'll come across huge craters, probably from 10-ton bombs, which are filled with green stagnant water, and the smell is indescribable in this summer evening. It's a most fantastic scene. I don't think anybody will forget it, with Americans and British soldiers mixing freely with the Russians, swapping little bits of equipment, admiring one another's arms and weapons, and nobody seems to be taking any notice at all. They're just moving round jeeps, having a look round the city, and it's come and go as you please, from one zone to another. Everybody's strolling about, looking at the damage. There aren't many people on the streets where we are here now. Funnily enough, I thought this would be a mecca for everybody to come and look at, but it hasn't turned out that way, and there's no British soldier in sight, no American soldier in sight, only the Russian officers who moved on a little further away wearing their medals, and a German caretaker from the building itself here. One thing that did strike me up by the Evangelical Church, right in the middle of the square, was one very antiquated fire engine. I doubt whether that could have coped with the scale of blaze that we had here. And that's the impression one gets standing in Berlin, that it was a problem that they couldn't possibly hope to deal with at any time, the scale of the bombing and the scale of the fighting. And that's the impression it leaves us with. It's a cold, dead, finished city.
That description of Berlin came from Captain Franklin Engelmann. Here in London, we are eagerly awaiting news from that same city, Berlin, news which will tell us how the future of our world is to be molded. We are watching the daring with which British and American fleets bombard the coast of Japan, and we await the great events which are imminent. London is the great clearinghouse of people on their way to and from Europe, and of those making the longer journeys to the Japanese War. Back from Europe as a member of the National Fire Service is Company Officer Harry Adams. He has served for the last 7 months with the American forces. Here is his answer to the question, did you have a busy time?
Very busy. We were protecting millions of gallons of petrol in all sorts of containers, supplied by Pluto, you know, the pipeline under the ocean, and millions of rounds of ammunition and enormous stacks of clothing and stores and food of all kinds. The Rhine crossing was in progress, and things were moving so fast that although Jerry left us alone, accidents were bound to occur. I remember one accident. A pipeline had burst, and it had covered several acres of ground, almost a foot deep in petrol. It took us 2 days to get things working normally again. On another occasion, a factory dealing with the repair of damaged ammunition blew up, or rather some of the stacks of ammunition blew up. We put that out with the help of the American tank dozers.
That was the voice of Company Officer Harry Adams of the National Fire Service. Now we invite you to hear a sound you have never heard before. It is the sound made by the fastest fighter aircraft now in service, the Gloster Meteor. This recording was made in a recent test flight and is the first recording to be made of one of Britain's new jet aircraft. Glimpse into the future was provided by the jets of Britain's new fighter aircraft, the Gloster Meteor. One of the great discomforts of the present in London is this business of queuing. You call it standing in line. Housewives thought that the end of the war in Europe would end the need to stand in line when buying their household goods. But the call-up of Britain's manpower continues for the war against Japan, and so we still have to stand in line. Well, here's a description of it by a London housewife.
If you're in the mood, queues can be quite fun. You join onto the queue at the fishmonger's. The end is probably right out of sight of the shop itself. So when you've succeeded in establishing friendly relations with the people right behind you, you get them to hold your place while you do a spot of reconnaissance to see whether the fish on sale is worth queuing for. You come back and report and then have an exchange of opinions as to the best ways of cooking it. But the grocer's is the most maddening part of my family's queuing. You see, there are three queues. One for fats, one for cheese and bacon, and a third for sugar and dry goods. When you arrive, there are probably quite small queues at each of the three counters, so you choose the smallest and join on. But the smallest isn't always necessarily the quickest. And by the time you've brought your 7 ounces of fat, which has taken you, say, 15 minutes, the other two queues have grown to staggering proportions, and you have the choice of at least another hour in the shop or a return visit the next day.
And now from another housewife, a Shakespearean parody on the same subject, read for us by Bing Whittaker.
Queue or not to queue, that is the question that's giving London mental indigestion. Whether 'tis nobler for the feet to ache or let the family go without its cake. Whether to be a martyr to one's bunions or sacrifice a pound of Spanish onions. To suffer fallen arches in the hope that in return you'll get a bar of soap. To queue or not to queue, what's the decision? To get your share or die from malnutrition. The latter won't protect you from your fate. You'll have to queue to pass the pearly gate.
Well, those comments on queuing from London's housewives illustrate the nuisance, but also the spirit in which it is being taken. On London on leave from Burma is Squadron Leader Charles Gardner. So much of the news from the Burma theater refers to the monsoon that we asked Squadron Leader Gardner to tell us what exactly is the monsoon. Squadron Leader Gardner.
Everything in weather can safely be blamed onto the sun, because the heat of the sun is the basic cause of every wind that blows, hot or cold, wet or dry, breeze or gale. The monsoon is just one of the winds. I know that most people, myself included, talk about the monsoon as though it's the name of a rainy season, which happens in Ceylon, India, Burma, and the northern part of Malaya from May to September. Actually, monsoon is just the local name given to the regular winds of the Indian Ocean area. There are two of them. The northeast monsoon, which puffs steadily away in winter from October to the end of April, and the southwest monsoon, which does more than puff, for the rest of the year. That's during our summer months in the northern hemisphere. It's the southwest monsoon that's the brute. It's a hefty wind, and since it comes all the way over the Indian Ocean from East Africa, it gets pretty well loaded with moisture. As soon as it hits the land, down comes the rain. The places to catch it, as is obvious from a map, are the west coasts of Malaya, Ceylon, and India, and the west coast of Burma, with a good bit left over for southern central Burma, where our troops are fighting now.
Well, that description of the monsoon was given by Squadron Leader Charles Gardner. Now from London once more to Berlin. That grim city is the background to a proud occasion in the stirring history of the 2nd Armored Division, United States Army. Captain Frank von Engelmann describes the scene as the division is inspected by the Chief of Staff, General George Marshall.
There's a long stretch of Autobahn just outside Berlin on which all the famous motor car races were held before the war. About a mile and a half of it is absolutely dead straight with a twin track. And on this mile and a half is drawn up in most incredible precise lines the armor, 90% of it, of the 2nd Armored Division. one of the proudest divisions of the United States Army, one which was first trained and raised by General Patton in the United States, and then came over to Africa and Sicily, and so on its way to D-Day in Normandy. In fact, one of the half-tracks here has D-Day painted on the side. And today, in front of this armor that's drawn up here, is passing, very slowly indeed, under the pines and in the quietness, a half-track bearing General George Marshall, Chief of Staff of the United States Armies under President Truman. Yesterday, the division was reviewed here by President Truman himself in Berlin for the three-power conference. And today, the second tribute is being paid to this division with such a splendid history. Here comes the half-track as each battalion is brought to the general salute and the men greet their commander as he drives slowly down in front of them. With him in the half-track is Sir Alan Brooke and Admiral King of the United States Navy. It's followed by another half-track, this time of the Guards Armor Division. And there, in front of that, is Air Marshal Tedder and Field Marshal Alexander. Behind that, again, is following a large blue saloon car open with various high-ranking Russian officers in. Their heads are turned from me. I can't see who they are. And very slowly behind it come various other members of the missions who are here in France, in Berlin for this occasion. A free French car passing in front of me now. And some Belgian officers. And some Dutch officers. It is really the most incredible sight to look down this long stretch of road and see nothing but these cannon and guns of the armor drawn up with their muzzles pointing to the sky in such incredibly straight lines. It's not such an easy matter either to get them into these lines.
That description of the inspection of the 2nd Division United States Army by General George Marshall came from Captain Engelman in Berlin. This is your narrator, Robert Beatty, closing London Column. The program was written and produced by John Irwin.